Later this year, we will have Pacers basketball for you. We are your exclusive home for the Indiana Pacers here in Monroe County and the Pacer Radio Network. And joining us today is the beat writer for the Indianapolis Star, IndyStar.com, at Dustin DePirak on the X. Good afternoon, buddy. How are you?
Doing good, Glass. How about yourself, man?
Anytime I can report to our listeners, it is 72 at 5:32 on August 20th in Bloomington. If there's a Hall of Fame for weather, let's go ahead and open the doors for that, buddy.
Truth. Very nice. That being said, I'm not looking forward to it getting colder than this.
It's not going to. It's going to be 75 in sunshine tomorrow, 79 in sunshine on Thursday, and then 85, 89, 90, 92, 92, 90. So we get it all. It's great.
There you go.
It's delightful.
We're expanding this. All right.
It's great to have you, as always. And the NBA, a little bit newsier than in August than I remember from the old days. But once the Olympics end, there's really not a lot of football news in the dog days of training camp to get to. So the association basically had a week to themselves last week and said, well, we're going to start releasing all of our goodies because our fans need a little something to chew on. So we saw the in-season tournament. Six leagues of five, and you'll explain to me how that works. And then the regular season schedule drop with the Pacers this time not being hidden from public view. Actually, it'll be the opposite. So let's start with the big schedule overall. Tyrese Haliburton really introduced himself to the NBA last year during the play or the in-season tournament and that championship game, the run to Las Vegas, even though they lost to the Lakers, playing those games in those, the quarterfinal, the Celtics, semifinals, Giannis, the final, LeBron. You're going to get some eyeballs. But last year, Dustin, how many? They had two games? Was that it on big time? TV?
It was one when it started when the schedule was released. The only game on the schedule they were supposed to be on TNT or ESPN. If you kind of look at the NBA and the NBA TV games is kind of their own category of, you know, like basically a channel that you have to get beyond, you know, like ESPN, TNT are generally considered, you know, sort of basic cable NBA TV, so beyond that. But last year, they had, I think, the one game against the Celtics on TNT was what they were supposed to have. But obviously, they had three nationally televised games during the in-season tournament, just in that week, during the knockout round. So that led to them getting, obviously, another game added to it. I want to say it was in March against New Orleans. Maybe it was either late February or March, because I think they played February 28th, March 1, in one of those two games in 3 days deals, but it was in two different spots. They played New Orleans once at home and then went to New Orleans, and I think the first one was nationally televised. And so that was added. That was kind of flexed in. Then obviously, of course, all of their playoff games were nationally televised. It's a dramatic move, obviously, going up to nine ESPN and TNT games, and certainly they can earn more through how they play in the in-season tournament. If they make another run of the knockout round, you could see them get flexed into that scenario later in the year. And obviously, again, postseason has all of its own opportunities. Certainly, if you get in the playoffs, you're going to get nationally televised games. And plus, you got five NBA TV games on top of that. So they're, not going to be hidden from view. They're kind of middle of the pack in terms of national TV games. I just saw a list. Obviously, they're not the Lakers, they're not the Celtics, they're not the Knicks. That is what that is. But all the same, you know, getting nine TV games is a pretty good deal for a smaller market team.
And I think the other thing that helped them, and we talked about this when they were playing the Knicks and the Celtics as well, they had some injury problems, just like the Celtics did, just like the Knicks did, just like the Bucks did, and they put up a pretty good fight. Even though the Pacers, they were swept by the Celtics, but what, three of those games came down to the final 90 seconds, right?
Right. No, exactly.
They've shown they're a little bit more than just Haliburton, which I think is interesting as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think the depth really showed out. I mean, obviously, anytime you want to get on a discussion on NBA Twitter, you know, there's this talk about how the Pacers are in some ways fraudulent because they beat a Knicks team without OG Anunoby and Julius Randle, and, you know, Jalen Brunson was battling through his hand injury in the later parts of that series. Obviously, Giannis missed the entire series. And Damian Lillard missed a couple games, but the flip side of that is they didn't have Benedict Mathurin at all. after March.
How does that get left out? It's just you just pick your side and just make a ridiculous argument and ride it till it dies. Yeah, they know Mathurin. Halliburton was in and out with hamstring issues. Everybody's hurt that time of year. Boston didn't have Porzingis. We can go on and on. So that's why I think you give them credit, because the pieces they were missing were their front line. We're not worried that Jalen Stick Smith was hurt. That's not what we're talking about.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, obviously, it makes a difference, certainly, when you're talking. I mean, Giannis is an all-world player, multi-time MVP.
100%.
And so that obviously changes the course. I mean, your team is different when you have Giannis versus when you don't. And obviously, Mathurin's a very, very good player, but, no one would argue that he's on that scale. So, it could have been a different series, obviously, and Anunoby obviously was playing exceptionally well. But there is, other counter-arguments to that. I mean, my counter-argument with the Knicks was just like, well, yeah, I mean, Tibbs was playing everybody 40 minutes a game. At some point, somebody was getting hurt. The fact that the Pacers trusted their depth to ride it was notable. One, it was a good coaching decision. Two, they just believed in guys 8, 9, and 10. I mean, T.J. McConnell and Obi Toppin, I think, had the first and second most total points in the playoffs. Those guys were excellent, and Rick Carlisle was willing to ride them. And Rick Carlisle was willing to take chances to get depth guys, on the floor. Who am I forgetting in the second unit? Ben Shepherd, obviously, played a ton of minutes as a rookie. Was a guy that averaged somewhere along the lines of 4 points a game during the regular season. But Rick Carlisle believes in him to move the ball, take open shots, and defend people. And so he averaged like 15 some odd minutes a game. I mean, he was getting way more play than guys like Alec Burks, who were a little bit more established in the league. Rick Carlisle trusts Ben Shepherd because he believed depth was going to work for him and that was going to help him play at pace. So there was, it was calculated on the Pacers' part to be a team that could outplay you if you had to dig in too far to your depth, if you didn't trust your guys. They trusted their guys to play. They didn't play any of their starters mega crazy minutes. Obviously they were all playing more than they did in the regular season, somewhere in the 30s, but they weren't, logging 40 minute nights, during the playoffs. So, I mean, they earned something and there's something to be said for that it wasn't entirely fluky and farcical. It was the case of a team believing in its depth, investing in its depth, and being paid off for that investment.
How important, in your opinion, is the style of play that Carlisle and that group that you were just explaining, that people saw it and said, okay, that's different than what we're used to? I think that's another selling point for the Pacers getting more on television. I mean, that's I don't want to call it the modern NBA, but when you're the fourth highest scoring team in the history of the league, I'm not buying tickets to watch defense, and I'm not sitting in front of the TV to go back to the 90s and watch Bad Boy Pistons either.
Right, especially in the regular season. Obviously.
Hunter, I can't control the playoffs. Right. The regular season, this needs to be advertised as the game moving forward.
Right, exactly. I mean, like, if you want to watch somebody in a random Tuesday night in January, what do you want to see? You want to see points, basically. You want to see scoring because, it's not going to be the kind of life or death defense that you see in the playoffs. You just can't recreate that. When in that case you're talking about, a win or a loss obviously changes your trajectory and changes a playoff series. You're just not going to see it at that level again on a Tuesday night in January. And so that's, the Pacers are a team that in that case you can't keep them off TV because it's just like, okay, like this is going to be the most entertaining product that you can put out there. It's certainly different because it's not the same major market. It's not going to draw the kind of eyeballs just on the basis of this is a brand name. But in terms of this is a style of entertaining basketball that you guys are going to have fun watching when, the other options aren't that great. Then this is a game to check out. And so I think that definitely made a difference that, hey, like this is its style of play is tough for other teams to deal with. It is fun to watch. It's entertaining. At that point in time of the season, they have a chance of going off for 130, 140 on any given night. And it's run out dunks on the break. It's threes. It's basically all the stuff that, you pay tickets to watch and, you buy tickets to watch. Basically, it's a show, more or less. I mean, obviously they've got to get better, at defense, at rebounding, that kind of stuff. I don't expect them to be as high scoring as they were last year. I expect them to defend better. And they obviously have another marquee guy in Pascal Siakam that they can throw the ball to. It doesn't have to be this just sort of constant run at you all the time type of deal. That's the only way they can score. But it is still a show that they're going to put on. And Tyrese Halliburton is a maestro when it comes to playing that style of basketball.
He does, and he will have Benedict Mathurin hopefully at full force as he returns. Andrew Nembhard got Olympic experience as well. Obi Toppin is re-signed. The only roster part, and we'll get back to the schedule here in just a second, Dustin Dupirak, obviously the voice you should know by now, 5:43 on a Tuesday evening. Everybody is signed up and ready to go. The roster is complete, and Oscar Tshiebwe was the final piece that the Pacers decided, as you projected, was going to be the case. They instead went with the second-round pick from Akron. The roster's set now, right? Or do they? Or how does this work when training camp hits? Is there a free agent camp? What pieces are movable on this chessboard at this time of the season?
Yeah, at this point, the last competition is Cole Swider versus Kendall Brown for kind of the last available roster spot. Obviously, you know, in theory, James Johnson is guy number 15. Certainly, he's making the team, and he's probably not going to play, and it doesn't matter what he does in camp or doesn't do in camp. The presence of James Johnson is basically a sure thing. You know, he's not getting cut based on performance.
No.
James Johnson
Enforcer.
Is on the team to be James Johnson, yes. So, you know, Cole Swider and Kendall Brown are, you know, basically kind of the last kind of spots. You know, obviously big, longer wing guys, but certainly guys that haven't necessarily made haven't had a full-time job basically in the NBA. Brown's contract was full-time at the end of the season, but these aren't guys that have played, you know, major NBA minutes. They have played, I think at this point, both of them spent more time in the G League than they have in the NBA, but they're each kind of getting their own shots. Wider had a really good performance for the Heat in summer league, was particularly good prior to Vegas, basically. Obviously, some of those teams play in those events in Salt Lake City and I think Sacramento. He was in one of those. I can't remember which one Miami was in. I think it was Utah, but I could be wrong about that. But I mean, he had a really good performance for them. For whatever reason, it didn't work out roster-wise for him and the Heat, but the Pacers signed him up. Obviously, he's kind of a similar build to Kendall Brown, you know, kind of big, long, rangy guy. Was a pretty good player at Syracuse, as I remember. And so he and Kendall Brown are effectively going to battle for that last spot. Obviously, Brown didn't get a ton of minutes, but you get down to guy number 14, it's tough to get that, really big. It's tough to get a lot of opportunities, but that's really the last spot on the board. The two-way contracts are all taken. You know, Quentin Jackson is going to get another crack at it. I think that was really kind of between him and Tshiebwe, in summer league. And so I think you could go either way. I think Jackson maybe has some more growth, not growth potential necessarily, but you kind of know what you're getting with Jackson. He's certainly a really athletic player. You know, for a two guard guy that can score a bunch of points, you know, especially at the G League level and might maybe have some capacity to do that, over the course of 82. Certainly not a guy that you're imagining being in your playoff rotation, but somebody, that on, you know, again, somewhere deep in the dog days might be able to make an impact, if he gets caught up on a two way. Tshiebwe, they obviously, I guess effectively believe they weren't going to be able to get what they needed out of him defensively as much as he could produce, on the glass. They haven't been able to really trust him when it comes to having to switch a lot, and, you know, have to defend perimeter players, which you're almost always asked to do now at this point for centers. You got to be a really good drop coverage big guy to be playable, and he wasn't quite that. So, you know, either be really switchable or be phenomenal in drop coverage, and so he wasn't either one of those things. So I think that's obviously what those decisions make. It's Jackson. It's Enrique Freeman and Tristan Newton are the guys that have the 3-2 ways this year.
Dustin Dupirak, IndyStar.com, Pacers coverage, support local journalism, buy a subscription, follow along on the X. The Pacers will have four preseason games. They will have two on the road in Atlanta, in Cleveland, then home for Memphis in Charlotte. We're in preseason football mode right now, so we're not going to get into what preseason games entail. We'll talk about that with Dustin when he returns in October. Yeah. But the regular season is interesting because, boom, 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 right off the go, three of your first five are against the elite of the East. The fourth of the five is against a team that's just like you, getting ready to perhaps pop. And look, I'll be fair. The Pacers did make the Eastern Conference Finals last year. That cannot be dismissed. And then I think probably the easiest opening game you could imagine, at least in your own conference, would be opening up against Detroit before heading to New York for a Eastern Conference semifinals rematch. Those are the first two games, both on the road. And then it's home Philly. That will be Paul George's return from, his 18th return with 18 different teams. Before going to Mickey Mouse Land with Orlando and then Boston. So in the first 7 days, there are five games. Welcome to the NBA season, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, you're talking about, again, like you said, it's four straight playoff teams in a row, New York, Philly, Orlando, Boston. And, you know, the teams that didn't reach the semifinals in that group, Philadelphia and Orlando, both bolstered their lineups. You know, obviously, I think Philly had arguably the best, it made the biggest splash in the offseason, maybe of any team in the NBA, obviously, by getting Paul George and then sort of backfilling after that, you know, getting some smaller pieces, obviously, to fit in. But I'm trying to think of who all they ended up with. They let a lot of guys walk. They basically let
100 guys walk because they had to pay George. You come in with that salary, you can't. It's not going to be George and Harden, and they that doesn't work. Only when it does work.
No, exactly. You know, certainly, but I think they did better filling in than I would have expected, I guess is the best way that I could put that. There were guys that they picked up that went out and got Caleb Martin. I thought that was a nice addition. They were able to sign Kelly Oubre Jr., I think is a nice player. Andre Drummond, who can
Eric
still
Gordon.
Give you some really good rebounding. Eric Gordon, Reggie Jackson, I still don't think is a terrible player. They just signed Gershon Yogasele, and I have no idea if I said his name right or not, but the guy I thought that was really impressive for France in the Olympics, basically kind of probably the best guy who did not already have an NBA contract.
Yeah, good point.
You know, it was the guy that they went out and got. And so Kyle Lowry is the guy that they kept around. And so basically it is tough to build a team around three max, you know, mega max contract guys. Obviously Embiid is over 35% of the cap. Paul George is at 35% of the cap. And they signed Tyrese Maxey to a max deal at 25% of the cap. I mean, you know, really between those three guys, you're looking at pretty close to 90% of your cap space. And they managed to, again, put at least a decent team around them. I thought Jared McCain getting him in the first round from Duke was a nice piece. So there is a better supporting cast than you usually get around three max guys. Two max guys is a lot more doable. You have a lot more flexibility. Three really tightens things up, and you can't miss. Basically, you've got to get all these guys. You know, everybody else is making less than $10 million each, and you have to find a way to fill those guys in, and also have some veteran leadership. And they somehow managed to do that, getting a lot of veteran minimum guys though that have produced. And so I thought it was an excellent offseason for them to be able, if they were going to go big like that, you know, they had to be really smart about who else they got, and I think they were.
This schedule is
looking a tough Philly team and tough New York team gets Mikal Bridges, Orlando added on, and Boston. So right out of the gate, you get popped.
Well, there's four in a row.
Yeah, you're going to get tested.
New Orleans, five in a row. Dallas, six in a row. Orlando again, seven in a row. You can catch your breath with Charlotte, who you couldn't beat last year for whatever reason. And then you have New York, Orlando, Miami. That is a brutal schedule to get your season started. So the Pacers need to be they need to be healthy in camp, and they need to be up and ready to go, because you get out of the blocks here and it's just not going your way. You're going to be 4-9 or something silly. I hope that's not the case, but that is not easy. When you can pick out Detroit and Charlotte from your first, how many games is that? Dozen?
Yeah, that's
that is
your first
brutal.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, adding on to that, obviously you do have to know that, okay, if you get popped or if you're just not where you want to be, you know, that doesn't mean that you're buried. You know, you're going to have some time opportunity to make that up later in the schedule. Basically, there are going to be times when it gets easier. It's very home heavy down the stretch as well, where it's very road heavy early in the season. So you can take some of those L's and think, okay, it's not going to be like this always. You know, we're going to have an opportunity to make this up. You know, like we really got popped out of the gate, and that's the schedule thing, and it'll even out at some point in time. You get to kind of hang your hopes on that if that doesn't go as well as you hope. Or basically, you don't have to also be 7-2 or whatever out of your first nine to feel like you're going to be a really contender. I mean, if you're hanging around at 500, you can look and say, okay, you know, that's not a bad place to be. You know, wherever you're at, basically by November 15th or November 18th, if you're at or near 500, you got to feel pretty good about yourself. And that does give you, you do see opportunities down the trail to say, all right, we can make this up. You know, obviously they got a home stretch there. That's where it's Washington, New Orleans, Portland, Detroit. You can make some time up.
Yes.
Memphis, Toronto, Brooklyn, Chicago, you know, late November, early December is an opportunity for you to come back if you take some hits. You know, obviously with this team, you know, the only issue though is that we've certainly seen with these guys, they get up for the big games and they tend to, you know.
Well, I expect that step to be taken this year.
We
got to the Eastern Conference Finals, and there's going to be a part of the idiot fan base that says, well, if you don't make the finals this year, you went backwards. No. If you win these games that you're talking about here, winning four out of those five instead of going 2-3 in those games, that's the step I'm looking for this team to jump. So it's a long season. That's the other thing we forget about as well. And the excitement of the NBA is right around the corner. Well, it's going to start in October, but that'll be here before we know it. You've got the Fever keeping you guys entertained, keeping us entertained down here as well. They're getting close to playoff time. But it's been a quiet summer for the Pacers, and I hope it continues that way, because this time of year the only news is what? Somebody gets surgery or turns an ankle or does something stupid, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. It was quiet for the purpose of, obviously, they viewed their core mission as keeping these guys together, rather than going to try to make a big splash in terms of what they added. They viewed, you know, Pascal Siakam as their big addition, and it was sort of cementing that was priority one, and then everything else was, I mean, they could have gone in some different directions and let some guys walk, and, you know, kind of played around with their kind of mid-level, you know, 10 to 15 million per year type of guys. They decided they wanted to keep theirs, you know, the Obi Toppins, you know, obviously re-upping Andrew Nembhard for his extension that goes into effect next year, you know, like believing in this group, and that's kind of what they did. And obviously that makes for a quiet offseason, and everybody so far has made a point not to hurt themselves or not to get arrested or not to get anything, to do anything else stupid. Everybody's done a good job of laying low and doing smart things. Obviously, I think Tyrese Haliburton was probably hoping to play a little more in Paris, but I thought he did a good job of being a
That was a Hall of Fame tweet, by the way. The group project one. Oh my goodness.
It was magnificent.
That was take a bow. That wins any. If you're gonna be the James Jones opposite on that roster, just be a good teammate. And he was. You're the best teammate, buddy. Will you come back and talk to us next month when we got stuff going on?
Sure will. Absolutely will. Bob.
All right, now go easy on the Reds this weekend, will you? We're trying to conduct them.
they're all beating each other up in the bottom half of the National League Central. It's been mass cannibalism, and I think it's over for everybody.
No team in baseball is projected to win 100 games. That's interesting as well, buddy.
Wild. All right, it's been a wild year. Absolutely,
Stay out of trouble. That's my only rule. Stay bored as a Pacers beat writer. That's the best. We'll follow you at IndyStar.com and at Dustin DePirak. Thank you so much, buddy.
Appreciate you, Glenn.